Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Tuesday, October 5th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're live or listening through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people and using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that page and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and effectively turn any negative emotional state I experience into part of the infallible guidance system that every one of us has been gifted. You can also download the worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click on the link, print it off, use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process or given powerful testimonials about how the active use of these tools in their life has improved their life. And you can go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do that soon and often because it tends to lead to comments, questions, or testimonials. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year, and today is the 278th day of the year. And the lesson today is, if I am bound, my father is not free. And so essentially, with a lot of double negatives and double speak, it says, if I accept that I am a prisoner within the body and the world is contained in what I experience with my senses, then I create a prison for the creator as well. The creator does not create, unlike its creation. And so the creator is incapable of creating someone that is powerless. It says, Father, I ask for nothing but the truth. I've had many foolish thoughts about myself and my creation and have brought a dream of fear into my mind. Today, I choose to awaken. I choose to awaken from the dream. I choose the way to you instead of madness and fear. For truth is safe, and only love is true and sure. And Pam Grout's Course in Miracles experiment book, Lesson 278, is titled, My New Mantra. She quotes Chogyam Trungpo as saying, the bad news is you're falling through the air with no parachute. The good news is there's no ground. Pam writes, my mind likes to replay old news. It gets on a repeating loop, endlessly cycling for temporary adrenaline boosts. Watch out, better duck. But today, whenever that happens, I notice I use the word when, not if. And lesson 278 reminds me to use these four letters, NRRN. That stands for not relevant right now. Anytime I think about the past, say maybe an editor rejected one of my brilliant ideas, then I pull out the four letters, not relevant right now. Or when I start thinking about digital images I need to replace that the two of my editor didn't like, again, I think NRRN, not relevant right now. What is relevant right now is that there is a gentle breeze swaying the catalpa trees in the backyard. There is a cardinal sitting in the bush beside my window. There is the soothing sound of my partner turning the pages on his latest mystery novel. There is so much to notice in this moment that the rest is, shall we say it together, not relevant right now. So that's our Course in Miracles workbook lesson and the Pam Grout Course in Miracles experiment commentary. And as usual, that leaves us about 50 minutes to have a conversation, to entertain your comments and questions and or suggestions. I'll remind us all that this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday is the upcoming Integrative Mental Health Summit, and it's available through that same named website, Mental Health Integrative Summit. And if you have any interest in participating and you can't figure it out, shoot me an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. I will be happy to assist you in making that something you can easily access. And tonight is a Tuesday night, so there will be a Tuesday Mindshifters support group. And in that group, we will meet from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time, and you can access any information you need to join us, absolutely free if that's your desire, at mindshiftersacademy.org website. And please remember there's a separate login information page for each of these Tuesday and Thursday groups. So we have plenty of time for a conversation. What's on your mind? How could we support you today? I had somebody, Susan, send me a link from Richard Rohr's meditation because she recognizes that some of us get quite attached to our furry and feathered and four-legged and two-legged and legless friends. And so she sent me this Richard Rohr's daily meditation on the emotional intelligence of animals and the bonds that we create with them. Some of us do. He quotes Carlo Coretto as saying, I wonder what I ought to tell you about the friendship there was between me and a falcon. And Richard explains, Carlo Coretto, born in 1910, died in 1988, was a member of the Little Brothers of Jesus, a community of contemplatives based on the spirituality of St. Francis Assisi. In this meditation, Coretto speaks in Francis's voice, combining Francis's biography with what he might say to us today. and this is what he says. I was in a hermitage where I had withdrawn to pray in peace. I noticed that very nearby was a falcon with its nest. We became friends. Then the falcon undertook to rouse me from my rest at the hour of prayer, at midnight, and again at dawn for lauds. He always performed his duty with precision. Once he even went beyond the call of duty. He had noticed I was not feeling well, and so he did not awaken me in the night, but only in the morning. I think God was guiding me by the falcon. You can go ahead and smile, but it happened to me, and I took pleasure in it. Even going so far as to hold conversations with all manner of creatures and preach various sermons to them. I made an effort to make them understand that I was a friend, and at first they were astounded and incredulous. But then they believed, and they drew near, and they listened to me. It was as if the dimensions of the kingdom had been enlarged for me. It was as if a number of my sisters and brothers had become measurelessly greater. And then Richard writes, science is beginning to confirm the intuitions of mystics throughout the ages, including Francis, that we share kinship with animals. Consider the insights from the fascinating book When Elephants Weep, which explores the emotional lives of animals. Author Jeffrey Mason considers animal relationships that surely transcend mere survival and could even be called love. From that book, here's an excerpt. Lionesses babysit for one another just as house cats do sometimes. Elephants appear to make allowances for other members of their herd. One African herd always traveled slowly because one of its members had never fully recovered from a broken leg suffered as a calf. A park warden reported coming across a herd with a female carrying a small calf that had been dead for several days. She placed it on the ground whenever she ate or drank. She traveled very slowly, and the rest of the elephants waited for her. There appears to be so little survival value in the behavior of this herd that perhaps one has to believe that they behaved this way just because they loved their grieving friend, who loved her dead baby and wanted to support her. Richard writes, I think we know so little about our ensouled universe. So, for those people who are especially connected or find that they have deep connections and intimate relationships with animals, you're not alone. And it's been happening for hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands and thousands of years. So, 563-999-3581. Call that number, press 1, let me know what you'd like to do with our next 45 minutes. We have time to talk about any of the various topics that we've been exploring in the past 10 and a half years. We also have time to work through a worksheet or discuss any of the various worksheets that are available at whyagain.org. 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1, and we will have a conversation. How can I support you today? I was put to mind of somebody that was reminding me about one of the older reality management worksheets, and one of the difficulties some people have when I talk about how the creation of my emotions, as with every human being, is 100% an inside job. And people get confused by this because then they talk about how this person or that situation triggered me to upset. And if we come back and we make this observation that everything is an inside job, that the production of my emotional state is something that happens inside me, that when I focus enough of my mind energy on a particular thought pattern, it resonates energy, and it either resonates what I already have inside of me, or it starts to generate the emotions right there from this dynamic of pouring my mind energy into this thought pattern. Dr. Michael Rice has an exercise like this that he has routinely done in one of his workshops when he would travel, and he would say, let me ask you to experience sadness. Just close your eyes and let yourself experience sadness. And then breathe and soften and then let that wash away and then release it. And then let yourself experience anger. And then breathe and let that wash away and experience hurt or confusion. And then breathe and let that wash away. And then let yourself experience joy and aliveness. And then breathe and open your eyes. And then he says, now how many people in the audience were able to experience these different emotions? And almost every hand goes up every time. And then he asks, how did you do that? And the answer, of course, is we had a memory or a thought that we poured enough of our mind energy into, and we generated those emotions by simply thinking about times in the past that we had interpreted them in a way that would lead to anger or fear or sadness or hurt or confusion. So the idea is, it is observable that when we shift the focus of our attention and pour enough of our mind energy into the new focus, we begin to generate within ourselves the shifting energies that we experience as the physical sensations that we call emotions. Now, if it's true that that's an inside job, and I want to really acknowledge that so that I can work with it, I want to observe it directly, and if that's the real thing that's causing my unpleasant emotions, I want to have as much direct access to it and ability to change it for better or worse as I can get, right? I want hands-on. I want to be looking at the cause level, what's causing my upset, what's causing my hurt, what's causing my confusion, what's causing my anger, what's causing my grief. And I want to intervene in a productive way so that my life gets better. If I keep thinking and speaking as though this person just triggered me or that event triggered me, I'm once again, in a very subtle but powerful way, placing the cause of my emotions outside of me. But we can observe over and over again that the cause of the emotions is not outside the person, because if you're with a group of 6 to 8 people and something happens and 2 or 3 people get upset and 4 or 5 people in the group are trying to calm them down and 2 or 3 others didn't even notice that they got upset, you know it wasn't the event that caused the upset in those 2 or 3 people, because everybody in the group saw the event, and if the outside event is what caused the upset, everybody who saw it would have the same flavor of upset at the same intensity. So there is some kind of a dynamic inside the people who respond with anger that's different than the dynamic inside the people who respond with fear, that's different than the dynamic inside the people that respond with calm or focused, you know, action-oriented to resolve a situation with a flat emotion. And that something that's different is the meaning people give the outside event. It's the interpretation that people choose and place on the event, or the automatic decision process. If you're Dr. Michael Rice, he doesn't use the word choice. He calls it an automatic decision process, that has me interpreting this situation the way I have interpreted similar situations in the past, and it's like a reflexive response. So if somebody comes along and they say, you know, you're stupid and you're ugly and you're ineffective as a therapist, and I haven't learned that what comes out of somebody's mouth is about what's going on inside of them, and I interpret this as a horrible thing and they have no right to talk that way to me or disrespect me in my own office or whatever, I can generate all kinds of upset. But at the same time, if I have been studying humans and thought processes and the connection to emotion and the interpretations we place on events, and I understand that an insult can't come out of a human being unless there's pain, fear, or sadness in that human being, and I choose to throw the interpretation on that same set of words as this is a cry for help from one of my fellow brothers and sisters, then I don't generate any upset. I generate compassion. I had somebody send me a link recently to a YouTube video that talks about how the world's ending. It's going to be ending, and Jesus is coming back, and it's Satan versus Jesus, and we better get our ducks in a row. And the person who sent it to me was clearly agitated. And I watched the same video, and I interpreted it very differently, and I remained calm. They had watched that video and interpreted it dramatically differently than I did, and they generated anger and fear. And they vacillate back and forth between anger and fear as they discuss the content of the video and the frustration that they generate when they expect that anybody who sees this should generate the same response they did. They get agitated because they want people to view the video and then get motivated to take action just as they are. What's the action? I don't know exactly what action they want. The action they were taking was, they were speaking excitedly. They were forwarding the message to anybody who would listen. They were trying to engage people in conversation about this. Same outside stimulus. Very different internal interpretation and very different results. I had someone in my office earlier who asked, what is it about parents in the 60s and 70s? He says, everybody he knows talks about if they ever spilled anything at the dinner table, their parents would beat them. And he wondered, what's the deal with that? Why were so many parents of the people that he associates with and hangs around and talks about things and trying to get, you know, better in their life, why so many of those parents would get violently angry if anything was spilled? And so I was there to clarify for him that it wasn't everybody's parents. Not every household worked that way. But in the angry, dysfunctional households, in the households where the parents had been fed anger as a response anytime something didn't work out well, that's what they learned. And as they grow up, one of the 10 bottom line observations says, every day I'm alive, I become more and more like my parents. Now, this is an observation. If you start observing your life and you realize that that's how it works for you, then some of the things that I've learned to try and cope with that reality, actuality, might be useful to you. It's somewhat unpleasant at times because there were things my parents did that I didn't really like when they did them. And yet, every day I'm alive, I become more and more like my parents. The deal is, if I'm awake and observing in the moment and I catch myself doing something that my father did or my mother did that I really don't like, then I have the option in that moment to choose again, to choose differently. But if an hour after I've gone on a rant the way my father used to, I say, I really don't like that I did that, there's nothing I can do about it right now. It's an hour after the fact. The only time I can intervene and break that pattern is in the moment when I notice that my behavior is replicating this pattern I don't like. So how do we do that when we don't want to admit that we're in a negative pattern or that we're stuck doing something? Well, one of the best ways that I've come across is to develop this and work to develop my ability to catch the early warning signs of tension or upset, a recurring negative thought or a negative emotion, or a physical tension in my body, and actively work from that perspective to call a timeout and turn the focus inside myself. The best way I know how to do that is to take a calming breath. Once I've done that, now I'm actually looking in the place where all of this is being caused. And if it's something that I don't like, and I see how it's being caused within me. Now I have access to the dynamics within me that are producing the thing I say I don't like, and I can start to change it. One of the best ways to change it is ask the question, how am I creating this negative emotion? It helps me further solidify the observation that it's an inside job. Another question I can ask in that moment is, what am I making this situation mean? Or what interpretation have I placed on this situation? Often that's enough to give me some space, shift the negative emotional energy enough that I can engage a tool like the reality management worksheet or the EFT tapping or another tool that just been reintroduced to recently, the emotion code by Dr. Bradley Nelson. And I can choose to apply that tool and let myself experience the shifting energies by keeping the focus inside myself where the production of those energies is actually taking place, or the resonating of old energies that have been trapped there from the past is occurring. And if I use the tools sooner and sooner after my recognition that I'm in a pain, a fear, a sadness, a muscular tension, a recurring negative thought, or a negative emotion of any kind, my life gets better. I use the tools, I use the emotion itself, the experience of tension or physical pain, as an alarm system to wake me up to the fact that there's something off the mark in my energy system. And then I use the tools to actually correct that energy from the energy system itself. The good news with that is I don't have to ask questions like, is this right or is this wrong? I simply act. I apply the tool and I let the results of the tool act on me. I usher myself into an experience that is different than it was moments before. And in that very process, I actively demonstrate to myself that this must have been an inside job because nothing's changed about the outside world or the other person's behavior. One of the things that does change when I do that is my perception changes. My thoughts about the outside event or the people around me change, sometimes dramatically in the blink of an eye. And that is a real wake-up call. That is something I've been using for a lot of years to improve my functioning by reminding myself about how intensely true it is that this is all an inside job. So 563-999-3581, call that number, press 1, we can have a conversation. What's on your mind? What have I stirred up with these comments, stories so far today? How can I assist you? I remember in one of the older worksheets, there was a line that was all bold and all caps, and it said, "The truth is, my reality is strictly internal. It's unique to me, and it's created out of my own thoughts." A little bit later on in that same worksheet, there's a line that said, "With blame, I hide my power." And when we would do that worksheet in the support group, I would stop people when they read that line, "With blame, I hide my power," and I'd ask them, "What power is being referred to here?" And most of the time, people would look at me dumbfounded. And I would simply go back up to the top of the worksheet where we had been previously been and read, "The truth is, my reality is strictly internal, it's unique to me, and is created out of my own thoughts." Which means I'm a very powerful creator. I am creating my experience of life in each new present moment with the thoughts I'm choosing. That's the power that if I blame somebody else for causing anything in me, I'm hiding from myself the actuality that I'm creating my experience of life in each moment by the thoughts I choose to pour my mind energy into. Another way to say that is I'm creating my experience of life by the interpretations I choose, the labels, the language, the interpretation, the cultural appreciation, the taboos. And it's amazing, even with the internet the way it is and the access we have to the varying cultural preferences or biases or inhibitions around the globe, it's amazing to me still how strong and intense so many people's biases and beliefs and inhibitions are. In some countries, it's absolutely fine to show naked adult humans. In others, it's horrifying. In some cultures, it's absolutely fine to have children play these video games that are just raw violence, blowing people up, stealing cars, you know, having prostitutes be physically abused, etc. And in other cultures, that would be abhorrent. And yet, across the board, even though we can see this in other cultures, we aren't accepting of the fact that it's just a set of rules. It's just a set of, you know, beliefs that some of us want to, you know, imbue with powerful law and powerful right versus wrong labeling. I forget where I saw this recently, but the idea of the violence that we do to one another when we judge, and this has been in the last couple of Course in Miracles lessons, where when I create a belief that this is a law and this is how it should be and that person shouldn't be like that, and I am using that tiny little bit of my conscious logical mind to make stuff up and create conflict and create judgment and create bitterness and hurt and project that out onto my experience of life. I remember the three things from the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, the fragments of it that they have in the scrolls. There's not that much of it that they have left, but what they do have, these three things are stated very clearly. One of them says, there is no such thing as sin the way you're being taught by your people. There's just energy that's off the mark. It's a feedback system. It's an archery term. Back up and try again. So there is no such thing as sin. The second thing from that Gospel of Mary Magdalene in the scroll and the fragments that are left is heaven is inside you. It's not outside you. Right? So the heaven's inside you. The third thing is that Yeshua was talking about make no laws other than the ones I have given you already. Well, if that's the case, you can't look at life, you can't look at the flow of creation and say this is bad and that's good, because that's making up a rule, that's making up a law, that's this person shouldn't do that, this person shouldn't say that. Couple of lessons ago in the Course in Miracles, it was having us accept that every person we see is the extension of the creation just as we are. Yesterday's lesson was, let me not bind the offspring of creation with laws I made, judgments, prohibitions, inhibitions, etc. When I do that, I create the upset that I experience. Michael Singer calls us to pay attention to the flow of life as a flow of energy that's intended to be moving through us from our root chakra through our crown chakra. It's supposed to be, life is this movie we watch from that observing space where we're not judging, we're not grasping, we're not pushing away. And when we move into that state, more and more we experience the ecstasy of creation, the bliss of allowance, of aliveness. We get to marvel in our ability to participate in this creative flow. And when I do that without the grasping or the pushing away or the judging or the categorizing, I have a very different experience of life. I just flashed on a thought from one of Guy Finley's talks. He talked about the biblical passage where it said, seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and all these things will be added unto you. And he said, now, here's the deal with that. We think that what this is saying is, if we seek first the kingdom, if we do what we think the scripture is telling us to do, we're going to get all this good stuff. But he says, if you go back to the original language, the Aramaic and through the Greek, and you take a look at it, it really says something more like, love above all things the rule of divine life, align with the divine mind and its rule. And then all of these things you think you want, all of these material things, will be placed in a passive position within you. You're going to get the realization that all that stuff never adds anything of value to you. And the loss of that stuff doesn't take anything of value from you, because you're not defined by the stuff, the physical, the mental, the emotional stuff that most people align with or identify with or accumulate. Love above all things, the way life itself unfolds, the rule of the divine life, the one mind. And all of these things you think you want and need will be placed in a passive position within you. So you'll understand that your value is internal and unchanging. You'll understand that the value of every one of your brothers and sisters that you encounter, man, woman, child, animal, plant, mineral, etc., the value of each of those people and entities is internal and unchanging. And you'll get the glimpses of starting to see those people the way their creator might see them. The Way of Mastery talks about the being able to see the shimmering radiance behind the image that our senses would present to us. And you know, this goes right back into the idea that what we're trying to do is wake up. Wake up to the fact that when we get stuck in our five senses and believing what stories or interpretations we make up about those, especially when they leave us feeling a tightness or a tension or a negative emotion, when we do that, what we end up with is a distortion of life, not actual access to life. We can't know our true nature. We can't even know what awareness is. We can't even be aware of awareness or see awareness. We can't know or see God or have any increased access to the truth of ourselves or creation when we're relying on our five senses, because that's, you know, we've talked about this so many times. My five senses don't even begin to give me access to what's out here in the world. I can't see infrared or ultraviolet. I can't see radio waves or television signals. I can't, most of us can't see chakras or auras. We know these things are there. I can't hear some things that animals hear clearly. I can't feel things unless they're very close to me and in a certain range of frequency of vibration that register in my felt sense. And yet, we think we know everything that we need to know. But in that same moment that we think we know everything we need to know, our science tells us that we can't hear most of what's out there. We can't see most of what's there to be seen. And we can't get access to conscious access to most of what our senses experience. So Michael Rice likes to quote this Harvard research. I think it's getting outdated, and it's getting outdated in the way that it makes it a very generous assessment. But he says, Harvard research indicates that in the period of time it takes our brain to process 10,000 brain cells firing up in the frontal lobes where we might register something with our conscious awareness, we are only able to be aware of about 9 single bits of information. And in that same period of time, various estimates, again, I said, this is a conservative, a very generous estimate. We're able to be aware of 9 bits of information. There's probably 20 trillion bits of data hitting our 5 senses. And remember, our 5 senses are barely able to recognize a fraction of what is happening in the world around us. Now, when you further restrict that to language and the conditioning thoughts that most of us have been programmed with, you begin to get a sense of how constricted we are and how rigid we are in our thought patterns, which is why the great spiritual traditions are trying to bring us to questioning everything, living in the question, dropping the knowing that carries words and labels and dogmas with it, and opening to the direct experience of knowing, which goes beyond words each new heartbeat, to breathe and soften. And, you know, if you're with Richard Moss's work, it's this focused spaciousness. With other people's work, it's this mindfulness, it's present moment awareness, it's being here now. It's stepping into the center of the mandala of being and just using your focus of your awareness very gently, like you would to pick up a feather, trying not to ruffle it. And keeping your mind open to everything else that's going on around you while you gently focus on one little specific part or another. Well, every time I have a negative thought or a negative emotion or a negative physical sensation, and I use a tool like the Reality Management Worksheet, I interrupt the pattern of thought and belief and dogma and prejudice and bias that I walked into the situation with, and I leave a little bit more space for me to have direct contact with the presence of life in that moment. And that's what we're hoping people do on a regular basis. We're hoping people pick up the tool that resonates most with them, whether it's EFT tapping or Michael Rice's Reality Management Worksheet or Byron Katie's Question Worksheet or Diedrich Wolsack's Choose Again 6 Steps Worksheet Process or Ho'oponopono or the Sedona Release Method or the Christian Science work that has, or the religious science work that has people doing affirmative prayer and people has people stepping into the other than physical senses observation, awareness that we can tap into and expand our experience of life. So we've got about 10 minutes left, time for a comment, a question. Feedback about whether I'm making any sense at all or I've gone on some kind of a dribble rant for the last 45 minutes, 563-999-3581. There is a support group tonight. You can find out about that at mindshiftersacademy.org. There is the Integrative Mental Health Summit coming up the 8th, 9th, and 10th, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this week. I will be leading or on a panel discussion on Saturday afternoon. I think it's about 4 o'clock Eastern time. And the topic of that has to do with the mental health impacts of trauma. And that's 4 p.m. Eastern, so it'll be 3 p.m. Central. And I'm also leading a discussion group, 2:45 on Friday, 2:15 on Saturday, and 2:40 on Sunday, all Eastern times. And each of those discussion groups is going to have that mental health impact of trauma as the topic. And then there's a whole host of wonderful speakers, panel discussions, and other discussion groups that you could participate in during those periods of time. And to find out about that, go to integrativementalhealthsummit.org. And or please pass that information along to anybody that you think might benefit from knowing about this, what we hope to be a wonderful resource for anybody who's going through a mental health challenge or trying to support someone who's going through a mental health challenge. There are going to be topics related to food and how it impacts your body and brain. It's hormones and metals and how they affect women's health, supporting mental health with technology, a panel discussion on mental health and youth, 0 to 18 years. There'll be a series of breakout sessions on Friday having to do with faith and mental health, integrative psychiatry, how to have transformational discussions about difficult topics, healing invisible wounds, domestic violence and mental health, neurological reasons and why learning struggles and mental health are linked. That's just the breakout sessions on Friday. And again, there will be discussions and keynote speakers and breakout sessions again on Sunday about community mental health programs, supporting the mental health needs of our veterans, a global movement for mental health and physical health, the intersection of international psychology and orthomolecular integrative medicine, pathways to health, an example of living with cardiovascular disease and the mental health impacts of cardiovascular disease, alcoholism and recovery, and diet and nutrition for autism and study about that. That's on Sunday. That's the range of breakout sessions that are happening on Sunday. So as you can hopefully see, there's no lack of interesting topics, and it's available for, I think it's $25 if you go to the integrativementalhealthsummit.org. But as I've said several times before, if you don't have that or don't want to spend that, but you'd like to get access to it, send me an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, and I will arrange for you to have access. And it is an amazing group of people that are putting this together, scraping together the money to make this be a professional, well-produced event, and I hope that it is of use to you and others. It certainly has been quite the endeavor for the past year. People scrambling around to make this happen on the virtual platform, and normally they would do this kind of thing in person and have all the speakers and the breakout groups in a conference hall, et cetera. So do yourself a favor, tap into the topics that seem interesting to you, do somebody else a favor, and pass along the information, and let me know if you need any assistance in making the arrangements to participate. Send me an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, and maybe we'll see you there or talk to you there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the 8th, 9th, and 10th of October. And in the meantime, we still have 5 minutes in the first hour and the second hour coming up. So how can we support you? What's on your mind? What would be of interest as a topic or a question or a commentary? Perhaps you have a testimonial about how using the tools is working well for you or not working so well that we could assist you with. 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1, and we can chat. You could also suggest a question for Richard Moss, who I hope to be interviewing tomorrow, or Sean Perry, who's working with people who've had lived experience of mental health challenges and helping them recover and helping others recover. Those are the two interviews that are scheduled for tomorrow. And as always, I welcome comments or questions that you might want to ask one of those people. And if you don't have the impetus to call, you might send me an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org with your question for Richard Moss or anybody else that I've said I'm going to be interviewing. Area code 828, you're in the air.
Hi there. I understand we only have a minute or two. This is Magda, and I have just enjoyed your whole hour so much. I didn't want to interrupt. However, I do want to share this with you. I used to get boggled by that same thing you were talking about very, very early in the program about the worksheet that said, I was triggered by so-and-so, and my interpretation at that time was that so-and-so triggered me to anger. So-and-so triggered me to fear, and I got that very mixed up with the word caused. The triggering I was using as equal to cause, and of course it isn't. So I just want to share with you what I really liked about Dr. Gabor Monte and how he gave a very good example of this whole thing of triggering. So if you think of a gun has a trigger. A trigger is a very, very small thing. And if the gun is empty, and you pull the trigger, and you pull the trigger, and you pull the trigger, nothing is going to happen. But if the gun is loaded with explosives inside of bullets, and you pull the trigger, boom, you get a big explosion out towards someone else or something else. And I thought that was a really good way for my my visual learning to get it. So I just wanted to share that.
That's a good one. And who did you get that from?
Dr. Gabor Mate. And I did learn how to say his name because I've listened to him say it. I know the last time we talked, you weren't sure.
I keep hearing all kinds of different people that interview him say it different ways. But so, Gabor Mate.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's another good one. And it's all an inside job. And any way we can get clear about how it's an inside job, it gets empowering for us. Because if I can understand how I'm doing it, then I can have the access to undo it. All right. Well, thank you so much for the call.
Indeed.
All right. Blessings. And I will mute you and remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I hope to welcome Jeannie Rice in our last minute.
Hi.
For a transition.
Hi, thank
Hello.
You.
Yes,
You're
very
I'm
welcome.
Here.
All right. Well, have a wonderful show.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Tuesday, October the 5th, 2021, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. honored and delighted that you're here. And certainly appreciative of the fact that we get to have this conversation, open this conversation one more time about the first century Aramaic forgiveness process and all of the correlated tools. Yesterday we talked about mind shifters, and I don't think we actually opened the lines for anybody who wanted to get a mind shifter genie. We did talk about using that one each time I open, face, and heal another issue in my life, even though it may be physically, mentally, and or emotionally painful. I take one more step into vitality and eternal life. So if anybody worked on that mind shifter, it'd be awesome to hear how it impacted you, what happened as you wrote about that. And to use the mind shifter, you know, you take the thought that is the mind shifter, you put it on the left side of the page, you draw a line down the middle of the page, divide it in two, and you use the mind shifter as a catalyst to resonate whatever's in your mind, and then dump it on the right-hand side so you have a record. And so that's the focal point of a mind shifter. And so if you'd like to get a mind shifter, specifically related to the sheet we were talking about yesterday, we'll ask Jeannie to get it out. And again, you pick two numbers, one from the grouping 1 to 3, first number that pops into your head from 1 to 3, and then a second number from 1 to 13. I always use that. I've used that for, I don't know, 4 decades now working with people, so that I bypass, you know, my intellect, their intellect, and trying to figure out, oh, what should I work on here, and ask for guidance. And it's actually quite hilarious, especially in intensive where a number of people are gathered who've been working together for, you know, a week or 2 weeks maybe. And then we do a mind shifters and still point breathing process. Each time in an intensive we do the still point process, we start it out, or, you know, we assign a mind shifter and get people to do some writing to stir things up. And so if it stirred anything up for you, it'd be interesting to hear what your process was if you worked on, if you wrote that mind shifter yesterday, and or if you want to push one and get a custom mind shifter, just push one. Jeannie will answer and will ask you for your two numbers from 1 to 3, from 1 to 13. So you've got two separate numbers. And that will key you into a specific mind shifter, which she will give you. So if you're ready to share, push one. Let's talk about it. And or
Michael,
anything on your mind at all in regard to these awesome tools. Mind shifter, still point breathing, forgiveness, responsibility communication, commitment. You know, there's a list of so many tools. Each different workshop addresses a different aspect of the healing process. And so if you're out there in this land, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
There are no hands up. However, yesterday we didn't have time to get to her because we were having a pretty detailed conversation with a new young man who had just called into the show.
Yes, it was.
However,
awesome, wasn't it?
Julie had texted Mindshifter 1-1, and that one is, and I think that you've reworded it, but it says, "I deserve love just because the breath of life was put into me." So I don't know if you want to reword that somehow. I am love because the breath of life.
Yeah. I deserve to experience myself as love, as opposed to, you know, the kinds of conversations we talked about yesterday that replicate what messages we've been given by a power person. So that would be a rewrite of that. Actually, I do need to go in and edit the sheet before we send them out for the workshop this weekend. For there are a few edits for me to make there. So if you wrote that mind shifter yesterday,
we'll have to let them know that you're resending, because I have already sent the list to the people that had signed up. If you have signed up and you haven't gotten or found the email from me, I have sent you the first two videos, the Mind Shifters and Introduction to Still Point Breathing, and then also an hour and some, close to 2 hour video from our August intensive on Mind Shifters, and then I sent you the Mind Shifter list and asked you to pick two numbers and text me or email me and let me know what your two numbers are, because you need to be looking at doing your Mind Shifter. Of course, I sent you the list so you can look it up yourself, but I have sent that out, plus the Zoom links, to everybody who has signed up for Saturday. And we might want to mention for those who are listening what we're talking about for Saturday.
Okay, well, we're doing a Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing workshop on Saturday. And if anyone would like to join us, it'll be it'll actually start at 10 in the morning Eastern Time and go until 5 o'clock. And then it will continue. We'll give people a little bit of an intermission and to keep working on whatever surfaces and such. And then on Wednesday evening, part of the workshop Saturday, we'll do a second session. It'll be question and answers and processing time. So strictly for the people who attend the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing workshop. So if you want to participate in that, you could drop Jeannie a note at jeannie@whyagain.org and give her your phone number, and I'll get back to you, and we'll confirm your participation if you want to join us. And or if you want to join, we have as a result of the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing workshop we did last month, we've decided that each month from here on in, we're going to do a monthly Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. It'll be the second Saturday of each month and the Wednesday following that Saturday. So each month there'll be two sessions, and it's going to be done kind of like a membership, a club, what have you, where people can, join and just do one session. Or you can do a package of 3 months of sessions, and they don't have to be consecutive months. Or you can do a full year membership. And that full year membership doesn't mean you have to do every month for that year. If you give us some advance notice and, let's say, well, November, I can't make that session. I've already got, my Thanksgiving party planned or what have you. Then we'll skip that one, and it'll just tack on to the end so that it can be somewhat movable. If people commit to the year and there's a particular session that they can't attend, so you'll get those full 12 sessions. And so if you want to join us, and, cost-wise, if you're doing one session, and this includes two videos on the Mind Shifters workshop, actually the one from our catalog that as a DVD we used to sell for $40 will be included in that, and a video from the intensive on the Mind Shifter topic. So that'll be Mind Shifters and Introduction to Still Point Breathing, and then the Mind Shifters process from one of the intensives. So those two videos will be included, and you'll receive, after the workshop, it'll be done on Zoom online, you'll receive a permanent link to the video of that workshop that particular day. So you can always go back and review what happened and tap in and look at the instructions that were given and all of that sort of thing, as well as, so there'll be a total of 4 videos included in that session, the Wednesday evening follow-up. So all of that's included, and the cost, if you're doing just 1 week, is $150, includes all 4 videos. If you want to do a 3-month package, you want to sign up for 3 months, and you can place those, you can do one this month and wait 2 months and do another one, wait 3 months and do another one, whatever, then the cost for the 3 months is $300 instead of $450.
No, it's $370. Michael, it's $375.
Pardon me. Oh, excuse me. You got me. Pardon me. I don't have the sheet in front of me. And then the yearly membership is $1,200, and if it's paid in advance, then it's $900. So we're going to deduct $300 off of that. So $75 a month for a year, and you're part of an ongoing educational process, particularly geared, although I'm sure that won't be the only thing we'll address, but particularly geared to how to utilize the Still Point Breathing process and becoming really well acquainted with the Mind Shifters process. So that'll be a full year educational process if anybody wants to play. Drop Jeannie a note at jeannie@ whyagain.org. And or if you've got my number, you're certainly welcome to text me or call me. We'll have a conversation about it and get you set up to come play. Some long-term students of the work are participating, and the things that open up when you get the hem of the garment, you know, we were talking about the hem of the garment principle the other day, working together in a community setting like that toward the same goal, the things that happen are quite monumental, quite profound. So, and Jeannie, the mind shifter that Julie happened to pick yesterday actually fits perfectly with our reading for today, which is from page 123 in the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? If you're new to the show, we're working our way through my book a few paragraphs at a time. And if you want to follow along, unfortunately, the book's out of print, but you can go to Amazon or eBay, and they have lots of used copies for sale, usually pretty inexpensively, almost embarrassingly inexpensive. And then we've also, if you want to go to our website, you can download the book free, actually in English and German and Russian and Spanish and Farsi and Danish, and I'm not even sure what other languages. There is a Swedish copy of the book, but the Swedish publisher didn't want to put the book online free, so they wouldn't let us do that. Unfortunately, we've been efforting getting the copyright back. It was supposed to default back to us, and we've been having some difficulties. The company seems to have that published it originally seems to have disappeared, and so we've had some challenges in being able to get that, because we'd like to take it and put it online so it's also available free. In any event, that's kind of a taste of what's happening. And in the book, on page 123, we're about the middle of the page. We've been talking to Richard about love and the direct experience of love. And he's been asking for a definition of love. And I reply to him, I don't have one. But I do know a way to experience it, or what will tell you when love is present. Well, Richard says, what are the signals that tell you love is present? First, the mind that holds the condition of love, in the ancient Aramaic, perfect love, is peaceful and patient in all circumstances. This mind takes responsibility for any disturbance it has, and therefore heals itself quickly and creates a space of healing for others. Additional fruit of the mind of love includes a tenderness, compassion, and gentleness. So when a mind is present, when love is present in a mind, there's going to be that state of serenity. Tenderness, compassion, gentleness. A mind that proclaims it punishes and brandishes fear and the name of love is either deceiving or is a deceived mind. No such fruit possible from love. We hear people talking about, you know, this overwhelmingly powerful being called love that created an insanely threatening place for us to burn and suffer. And that's just part of the fear-based mind's misunderstanding of the original language and the original meaning of the words in the Aramaic scriptures. If you go to the word hell in Aramaic, it's actually the Gehenna, the fiery place. It was basically a dump outside of the city of Jerusalem. I understand that today the Gehenna is actually a place of very high-end condos now. The dump is gone, and it's now valuable property. But, you know, basically it was the fiery place, the Gehenna. It was the garbage dump. It was where, you know, if people didn't have the funding to be properly buried, they took their bodies to the Gehenna to be burned. And it was where garbage was dumped. It was smelly. It was nasty. It was hellfire and brimstone. And they used that as a threat with little kids you don't be good, I'll take you to the Gehenna. And it worked pretty well, so they created one for big people. But if you think a mind called love is capable of that, well, then you haven't experienced a mind called love. It just not is not in your canna, I guess. And it's time for that experience. That makes sense out of a lot of senselessness I've seen, Richard sighed. What do you mean when you say you had a way to experience love? We could call this an experiential definition. Love is what you experience after you use the process of true forgiveness. It is what is left when the mind's realities get out of the way. Now, if I tell you that, and you believe it, we'll have another belief system in the world, another belief system that people will fight over and defend. If you use the tools and have a personally experienced, is there anything to fight over? No. Only the insecure who don't know what love is have to force and fight over their BS, their belief system. Only the insecure need to have everyone believe the same way they do so that their beliefs will not be challenged. Key thought here, an experiential definition of love, what you experience just after true forgiveness. Richard, each of us was created in and as a state of love, and that's such an important thought. You are created in and as a state of love. And we deserve to experience that state 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If we're not experiencing it, something is out of place. When we withhold love from another, it is we who suffer from the withdrawal of that love. It is we who experience the lack of love. Remember what you knew as a child about the way the world was supposed to operate? My function in the world is to deliver tools to people and point them toward the result possible with the use of the tools. My goal is to inspire you to use the tools and then arrive at your own conclusions about life. Of course, I think when the evidence is in, this work will prove itself correct. But the world does not need another belief system. It needs the experience of love. So you remember back in our reading earlier as we talked to Richard about this. Richard was kind of lost in this state where one moment he'd have clarity and he'd feel connected and the next moment he'd be in confusion. And we pointed out that the tools, as you use them, will uncover the confusion that needs to be healed. So if you take a moment and just allow yourself to close your eyes for a minute, take a deep breath, and remember a moment or allow yourself to imagine a moment where you are holding a newborn child. So just take a moment, breathe, let your mind go. And if you don't have the experience of holding a newborn, let me loan you mine. Actually, let me loan you two. I have two children. I have the privilege of getting to catch them myself as they were born. And I can remember the overwhelming intensity of the experience when my firstborn came out. It was actually brought some significant fear up in me, and it's something that I've worked on and had to process through. But then it moved into the space of holding such a precious presence. And I can remember the moment of doing that and thinking to myself, if somebody doesn't do something And in this context, my thinking was something about the state of the world. There's not going to be a place for this precious little one to grow up. And that's the thought, as that went through my head, is what inspired me to commit to doing this work on a whole new level, making it available to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. And then the second experience, as my daughter was born, her head delivered. And, you know, they tell you that a child can't focus their eyes, a newborn, for the first several days. My daughter opened her eyes and laser looked me right square in the eye, and she grinned during her birth. And I'll tell you that sent me literally into that direct experience of love in a way I had only, what should I say, very briefly tasted previous to that point. Actually, the weekend she was born, we had I lived in Atlanta at that point. We had a classroom in our home, and it was a weekend. I did weekend workshops, and I had a weekend set up for Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday, and along about 2:40 in the afternoon, realized that my wife was in labor. And I had a class starting at 7. There was one person I remember coming from Miami, and that was before cell phones. That was 40 years ago now. And so couldn't call and say, hey, we're canceling the class. The baby, the labor, once we realized she was actually in full labor, the baby was born within an hour. 4:40 was her birth time. And at 7 o'clock, 10-pound Krista Joy, we actually hadn't named her until in the process of the birth, and it just became really clear, and she informed us what her name was. So, you know, 4:40, she's born, and 2 hours and 20 minutes later, I've got her on one arm and I'm answering the door as people are coming in to do the class, and they're like, no, she wasn't just born 2.5 hours ago. It's like, yes, she was. And I went down to the classroom, started to teach, and here's the impact that that presence of love had on me, is I could not think a thought. I was, you've heard me say many times, you know, the real need that we have in healing is to be out of our minds, is to free ourselves from the grip of the perceptual constructs of our minds. Well, I was out of my mind. I could not think a thought with what I called my mind. And the teaching that I did, I actually, after the first few minutes, I don't remember exactly, but the first few minutes of that class, I stopped the class. I excused myself. I went up and got a tape recorder and recorded the rest of it. I lament that I have no idea where that recording is today, but I had to record it because I couldn't think of thought. The only way I've been able to describe what being in that experience of the pure presence of love, and my take is that her being so conscious and the transfer of energy, the resonance between she and I, when she opened her eyes and looked at me, opened that state of love full blown inside of me. And I had no mind. I had no mental function. That's a taste of what love is. And I could start coming up with a list of descriptors, the joy, the excitement, the sweetness, the beauty, endless. So what is love? The experiential definition comes when you go back to the moment where you first held a newborn. Now, in our Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, which many of you have been in. You've been there when Jeannie or I asked the question. Take a moment. Have you ever held a newborn? If so, go back and remember holding that newborn once again and tap into the essence of the newborn. Everybody's description of that newborn, the words they used to speak about it, is some variation on the theme of love. Now, when you go back and remember that, ask yourself the question, is the newborn loving me or is the newborn love? Pretty much instantly becomes clear that the newborn is not loving, that the newborn is love. And they are such radically different states that we need to clean up our definition of love, because if you think love is something you can do, you'll keep trying to do something you can't do. You can't do love. It's not possible. This is the principle that needs to be clarified, and I think it's one of the most important misunderstandings. You know, if you listen to Vladimir Lenin, here's a man who's responsible probably for more deaths of humans in all of history than any other human. And here's what he said. If you want to destroy a culture, change the meaning of its words. You notice that virtually everyone came into a world as the presence of love, and then they were lied to. They were told that love was something that you did or that was done to you, or that if you were a good person would be done to you, or that you would get from somebody else, or that you would give to somebody else. And all of that is a fraud. And if you get caught in the fraud, then your mind doesn't know what to do. And the result is confusion. How many times have we heard people in relationships and the whole game for them is about confusion? If you don't get clarity on who you are, if you're not living from who you are, then you're living from some kind of mental construct about love that becomes, oh, God, self-sacrifice, sexual athletics, all kinds of crazy definitions. Now, the really bad news that comes with this is that nobody has ever loved you. Nobody is ever going to love you. You have never loved anyone. And you are never going to love anyone, and God does not love you. All of that is a fraud, period. You are the presence of love. Love isn't something you're going to get from somebody else or that somebody else is going to do to you. Now, notice that what people think they are is really important. Like if somebody thinks of themselves, you get the little kid who starts out as love and they're told because one day they, you know, I mean, they were two and they did something and somebody looked at them and said, oh, you did that. They didn't do that at all. It happened. The child participated. The child didn't say, ha, I think I'm going to do this terrible bad thing. But the adult standing by told them that they were the kind of person who does terrible bad things. And the child who holds the belief that they are bad will tend to act badly because that's what they think they are. If you don't know who you are, then you will act out of who you think you are. And if you've been told the lies of the world that you're not good enough, you're broken, you'll never be good enough, your sister or your brother or your is better than you, or the thousand lies that come along that form a false identity for us as humans. If you don't ever discover and function as you are, then you will never function as love. You'll function out of your BS. By the way, that's a belief system. If you have a different set of initials for that, if you have a different reality in your mind, notice that, you know, somebody who holds one reality for his initials, BS, thinks and acts one way. You know, if I say to somebody, you're full of BS, and they think of it in the world's BS terms, they, well, how dare you say that about me? Whereas if that person knows that what I'm saying is you're functioning out of a belief system, they might be inspired to look into their belief systems and perhaps dismantle or forgive a false belief system. Can't function out of who you are if you haven't had the experience of who you are and you don't know who you are. And you are the created essence of love, period. Most of us came into a family system that as quickly as possible, often in the name of love. I mean, how many have ever heard that? I'm only hitting you because I love you and it hurts me more than it hurts you. I remember being fed that line and you know, the one who hit me, they weren't crying. They weren't wailing. They weren't in pain. It wasn't hurting them more than it hurt me. It's just such a crock that we've been fed. And it's time to stop eating that crock. And it's time to start knowing the truth. You and I and every human being, yes, even the person who you call the enemy, is literally made of the energy called love. That's their substance. They were made in the image and likeness of a creator called love, and that's who they are. And they won't function out of that until they know that. If they have a mental construct that there's something less, there's something worse, there's something broken, there's something wrong with them, then they'll function as someone worse, broken, and something's wrong with them. Until that idea is confronted, that lie is forgiven. So people are brought into the world, they have the experience of love knocked out of them, sometimes with a fist, unfortunately, and then they're told, they're sent out into the world with the command that says, now, go find somebody to love you. Or, go find somebody to love. And the command is false. It's a lie. We're given a command that can't be fulfilled. That person will never experience until they correct their minds. Remember, Paul talks about be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Until they correct their minds, they won't be able to find themselves as love, won't be able to experience themselves. And trying to function out of those insane power person messages, unconsciously motivated by them, leads to such trauma, such insanity, that it's beyond belief. So our purpose in being here is one, to learn ourselves to be the state of conscious, active, present love, to extend the energetic experience of that state to others. And when I'm talking about others, at this moment, I'm talking about you. And it doesn't matter where you are. On the level where energy moves or radiates from the truth of who we are as love, all matter is transparent. And so it doesn't matter if you're in Australia, Bob, holding you in our hearts if you're with us today. If you're in Sweden, Peter, holding you in our hearts if you're with us. Phipia, if you're there in Thailand. Or if you're just down the block here from us in Bristol, Tennessee, we extend that energetic dynamic, that presence to you. And here's what we know, is that each individual who realizes who they are and chooses out of love by doing so sets up a literal high energy wave, an actual energy field that, and you remember yesterday we were talking about resonance, that through resonance resonates the state of being in anyone they touch or think of. Hence the line in the worksheet that says, When I choose love, it wakes up the love in everyone. And when you realize that's who you are, you begin to free yourself from the grip of the physiologically implanted, reinforced by pain and trauma, ideas about yourself that are false. Story comes to mind back in the early days when we were doing Laws of Living. My partner, Dan McDougall, bless him, he's now passed. It was he and I that together created the course called Laws of Living. He'd actually created it for the prison system, a thing called Emotional Maturity Instruction. I was doing a thing called Lessons in Living. We put our work together. We had been traveling parallel paths with the Aramaic. We put our work together and created Laws of Living. And I remember Dan, you know, he did a lot of his work. He was an attorney. He actually was asked by a Superior Court judge in Albany, Georgia, course for the prison system. Emotional Maturity Instruction is what he created. And he was working actually in the federal penitentiary in Atlanta. Judge Kelly had previously been the in charge of the prison systems throughout the whole state of Georgia. Kelly was an amazing, as close to a saint as you could imagine. Kelly, as a judge, sentenced, God only knows how many people, to eons and eons and eons of time in prisons. But it was interesting, Judge Kelly, functioning as love, from love, never punished one person. He never in an angry time. Georgia's, there's a lot of backwoods Georgia going on. You go down to Albany, it's some pretty rough stuff here. There, and he had some heinous criminals come before him. But he would hold the space and be the space of love for them. And he would say when he was sent, seemed like some heinous crime. And, he would say to this person, I love you like a brother, sister, but you're not safe in the community. And the community has built a building with bars around it to isolate you from the community. And they ask me to decide who's safe in the community and who isn't, and you're not. So I'm going to sentence you to life behind bars. And I hold that space of love for you. I hold that you experience yourself as who you are, and I'll even sentence you to Laws of Living. One day in the federal penitentiary in Atlanta, this was over a period of months, he went into the penitentiary and the word got around as to what he was doing, and there were some people who really didn't like what he was doing, teaching people about the truth and how to experience themselves and function as love. And someone in the prison system put a hit out on him. There was one guy who had come to Laws of Living who was in there for life. And I don't remember now exactly how many, but while he was in prison, he murdered several more times, three or four times, after being put in prison for life in federal pen in Atlanta. And he did Laws of Living, and he really saw what Dan was doing. And, he woke up as love. And there was actually a contract put out on Dan. And this guy protected him and saved his life, or he'd have been killed in the prison. The guy who confessed that he just liked to murder people. Literally, that's what put him in the penitentiary in the first place. And as I say, he committed several other murders in the years that he was in there. And I guess, if you're in there for life, what can they do to you? Give you a life sentence? I don't know. But anyway, he became Dan's protector. He stood between he and more than one person who was trying to execute a contract on Dan and kill him. What's possible? The truth is, each and every one of us is the substance and the presence of love if we wake up to who we are. And each one of us that chooses that, by choosing it, wakes up, resonates, sets up an energy field that at least begins the awakening process for love in others, for the truth of who they are. And in the process, you simply throw off everything to do with hate and fear and pain inflicted and abuse and degradation and sexual assault and whatever's happened. You literally begin to remove those energetic patterns. You begin to forgive those patterns that are so deeply physiologically ingrained, because in an individual's bloodline that experiences that kind of assault, it's been going on most likely for generations. Remember that story in the scriptures about the Jews wandering in the desert for 40 years. Do you really think that a group of people who understood astronomy as they did could possibly be lost in a 35 square mile area for 40 years? Hello? Now that's a nice literal story to talk about. But, you know, I mean, they wrote about astronomy pretty brilliantly, so they knew the sun came up in the east and set in the west, and they knew that if they were, quote-unquote, lost, well, you got a max about 35 miles to travel to get out of the desert. You get up in the morning, you follow the sun. You get up the next morning, you follow the sun, and you follow the sun, and you follow the sun. How long can you be lost going in a straight line for 35 miles? It's a code word for the unconscious. It wasn't about a hot, sandy place. It was people who live their lives in the unconsciousness of who they are and live out of the unconscious. And that word desert is a code word for the unconscious. Lost in the family dynamics, the power person dynamics of 1,000 generations of insanity. If you read that passage, you'll see that moving from the desert to the promised land, one thing had occurred. Do you remember what it was? They said the old generation had to die off. That didn't mean everybody in old physical bodies had to physically die. The root of the word generation is genari. It means cause. All of the causes held, yes, right down into your genes that would present when resonated something based in hostility or fear. And if it came up and grabbed you by the face and sucked you in and you were doing its behavior and you just said, well, I didn't want to do it, but I couldn't help myself. The urge was just so overwhelming. That urge comes from the desert, comes from the unconscious. There's a thing in the mind called the automatic decision system. It's an important part of our course on laws of living to understand that. And forgiveness cracks the automatic decision system. Forgiveness opens the personal code and allows us to remove, forgive information that doesn't belong. And the word forgive means remove. It doesn't mean let somebody else off the hook. As you remove that insanity, then you're restored to the presence of love. You're now out of the desert. Where do you live now? Promised land. What's the promised land? It's the land of conscious co-creation. We consciously know who we are, and we consciously creating life out of love. Living in the desert, the unconscious, a sort of hell, we live in unconscious co-creation. Oh, we're still creators, but we have no idea that we're responsible for our why is this happening to me again experience. Certainly, it must be someone else's fault, and you're here, so it must be your fault. Thus, the unconscious cycle of denial, dissociation, projection, externalization happens, and people become lost in the desert of their own generational patterns, their unconscious. You remember in the scriptures, it said, look to the lives of the fathers, for ours are but a shadow of theirs upon the earth. Now, that wasn't a sexist comment, fathers. But it was that which sources your thinking. It could be fathers and mothers through the generations. Look to those lives, clean up, forgive what's in you from there. You remember Yeshua is talking to one particular group of people, and he says, your father is a liar. He is the king of liars. there is no truth in him. Guess what he was talking about? He was talking about perception based in hostility or fear. When your mind is locked into any form of hostility or fear, something from the generations has taken over, and it'll run your life. And you're not designed to be run by that. You're designed to experience yourself as the truth of who you are. And the Mind Shifter tool is designed to resonate those things that we've dissociated from, that we've locked away in the lockbox of the unconscious. And therefore, whenever it steps in and functions, it functions unconsciously. We don't even know what's going on. Somebody says, well, did you hear what you just said? And people say, well, I didn't say that. Excuse me, there were 10 of us, all 10. What did he just say? He said that. No, I didn't say that. Unconscious, triggered words right out of the mouth. And people swear, I never said those words. Oh, excuse me, we've got a recording here. Oh, yeah, but, well, yeah, I heard the recording, but I didn't say it. Like, excuse me? That's how the unconscious works. Forgiveness is a way to clean up the unconscious. Mind Shifter is a tool for getting those things that are hidden away, that we've subverted so deeply that we don't see them, getting to resonate again. So through resonance, they're strengthened and come, they fire off in the mind at a level where we can become conscious of them again. And that's why you split the page and you write whatever comes up from the Mind Shifter on the right-hand side of the page. Because then you can go back and work through it. You can go back and look and go, oh, my God, I didn't realize I had that. I remember the early days of writing Mind Shifters. And I go back to one after having written. It's like, where did this come from? I don't remember writing a word of this. Oh, my God, that's in my mind? Yeah, that's it. It's called the desert. It's called the unconscious. Most people live there at least the first 40 years of their lives. That's why I was, if you're with us today, Mike, that's why I was excited about your call yesterday that at 25, you're ready for this and rock it and see the truth of it. And we're here to support you 2,000%. And then the still point breathing process, the use of the breath, is the key way to opening the unconscious. You know, when they said the veil of the temple must be rent in twain, they weren't talking about a purple curtain in a church. The veil of the temple is the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious mind. Remember when you've seen me draw on the board and I draw a stick man, and then I draw a dotted line, and then I draw in the head, and then below that I draw a line, and there's just one little opening in it? That's the veil. That's the barrier of the temple. The barrier between the conscious and the subconscious mind are, it's a fenestrated barrier, but the conscious and subconscious are continuously exchanging places all the time. Rarely does what's in the unconscious pick up. That's why when I draw it, I draw it just one little opening. Rarely do people consciously, purposely get in touch with what's going on in their unconscious. And that veil, that barrier, they said had to be torn in two. Again, it's not a purple curtain in a church. That veil between the subconscious and the unconscious is built by holding the breath. And it's broken down by using the still point breath. That's what the still point breath is designed to do. Open the veil and give you contact with what's in the unconscious. And as that vitalization takes place, as you, you know, step into community, you touch the hem of the garment of everybody in the community, and everybody's vitalized, everybody has an easier time of opening that veil and staying conscious and moving through those things that need to be removed. And then you get to taste yourself as love. You get to experience yourself as who you are, and everything shifts. Until the next time an unconscious dynamic comes into play, and then you'll get your next forgiveness opportunity. And you're next, and you're next, and you're next. And if you're the early adopter, if you're one who's grabbed hold of these tools, and you can't look back and say mom or dad or sister or brother or aunt or uncle or cousin or one. You can't think of anybody else who could even think about entertaining the conversation. Being the early adopter, you've taken on a big chunk to bite, a big chunk to chew. And we're here to assist you in developing your masseter muscle. The masseter is one there that controls your jaw. That big muscle when you clench your jaw, you know, the one where a lot of people use to hold back and shut down and keep the unconscious closed when they clench their jaws. We're here to soften and open that, breathe through it, and the breath opens the veil. And if you're lucky in the process, you move into still point, and then still point is the place where you've opened that veil and you move energy in high speed, fast forward, removing what never belonged in you or in your bloodline, in your generations. You know, the Native Americans were brilliant. They understood healing. Whenever the Native Americans, you know, you've perhaps heard it, if you've gone into a sweat lodge with them or into a healing ceremony, they'll use the words metaquiasin. It means for all my relations, doing this just for me. We're doing this for all our relations. And who are all of our relations? Well, Einstein says this. If you think you're separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you are living in an optical delusion. The truth is, there's only one of us. We are cells in what the ancients called the mystical body of Christ, the mind of love designed to function, and that's the mind that was called the mind of Christ. Remember, Paul talked about the mind of Christ in you? That mind, designed to function through your physiology, opens and changes everything. It's not a religious journey. Christ has nothing to do with religion. The word Christ there, that mind of Christ, is the mind of love in you. Literally, you are, and you have as your birthright, the right and the capacity to live out of the mind of love. That's all. Because it's what you are. So I breathe with you if that resonates anything for you, and whatever's moving, that you breathe fully and freely, opening, you know, whatever's resonating at this moment, opening the veil of your temple and moving deeper and deeper into the state that we are each designed to live in. I'm just going to invite you to take a couple of deep breaths with me. I know Jeannie sometimes says I sound like Darth Vader on the other end, but one of the things I do, especially when I'm working with people, especially if something touches or moves something in me, is I breathe. So if I sound like Darth, it's really about me just opening my veil. So I breathe with you, invite you to breathe with me. Allow yourself to close your eyes and look inside and see the presence of love that is there. Experience the truth about who you are. And if you look with your inner eye, it may show up as a light, literally in each cell. And as you breathe, look at the light in each cell as it expands and reaches out beyond its own borders, the cellular borders, to the other cells that seem to be separate but are really part of one body. You know, when you realize there are trillions of cells that make up what you call your body, there's obviously just one you, but there are trillions of individuated components. In the same way, there are, they're telling us now about 8 billion people on the planet, each seemingly separate, but not separate, only individuated. And so see that light expanding out from each cell. And as it touches the light from the cell nearest it, watch that joining and that expanding of that light. Notice, where there any blocks in your breathing, if there are any, and let yourself breathe into that. Your physiology is a device designed to incarnate conscious, active, present love. If your generations are filled with rage and guilt and grief and murder and abuse and hostility and rage and criticism and condemnation and fear and victimhood and gossip and slander, guess what you're going to need to do to function out of that love? You're going to need to work through and apply forgiveness to what's stored in your physiology. You have to work through what came from the lives of the fathers. This is not always a pleasant work to do, but it's a necessary work. We're here to support you, assist you in understanding and applying the tools of forgiveness. The tools of the mind shifter, the still point breathing, the commitment, the power person worksheet, the responsibility communication tool. Each and every one of them. We hold a space of appreciation for each of you. And, my goodness, I just looked at the clock. We're down to about 5 minutes. And so I'm just going to check in, just invite you to breathe and just stay connected in that space of love. And, Ms. Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up?
No, we don't. And actually, we're down to three minutes.
Well, then let's just continue our meditation and our breath.
Yeah.
And just everybody, if you would, just take a breath. Stay with that energy and watch that light. And with your inner eye, watch that light in each cell expanding till it touches the light, spills over the borders of each cell into contact, into connection with the other light energy moving in each cell. And as the trillions of cells that make up your structure, the light expands in them and joins that light, exudes from your whole, what you call your body. It moves out. And remember, there's nothing in the so-called physical world that can stop that penetratingly powerful presence of love. So if there's someone in your life that needs some support right now, they may be in the same room. They may be on the other side of the planet. It may be someone unknown. I invite you to breathe and hold to that active present love with and for them. The truth about you is that you are blessed. And you are the actual created essence of the Creator's love, designed to come in and inhabit this world consciously as love and bring those results into your world. And in so doing, you'll be empowered to create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Please go give it away. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.